The broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Andrew Strain, and I will be serving as the hearings officer today for the TRPA Hearings Officer virtual meeting of October 14th, 2021. I will call the meeting to order this time. Item two on our agenda is the approval of today's agenda. I will check with the staff to see if they have any changes to our agenda.
No changes.
Hearing none, I will approve the agenda as it's presented. Item three on today's agenda are the public interest comments for no action. Any member of the public wishing to address the hearings officer on any agenda item that's not listed as an announcement of appeal rights or public hearing item, or on any other issue, may do so at this time. However, public comments on announcement of appeal rights or public hearing items will be taken at the time those agenda items are heard. Georgina, will you please look for a show of hands to see if anyone would like to address the hearings officer as described?
Members of the public who would like to address the hearings officer may do so at this time by utilizing the hand-raising feature of the GoToWebinar app. The hand icon is located on the tab to the left of the GoToWebinar control panel. If you'd like to comment now, please raise your hand and I will announce and unmute you, and you'll have 3 minutes to make your comments. No hands were raised, so we can continue with the review of the agenda.
Thank you, Georgina.
Georgina, I see one hand raised. I'm sorry. It's Benjamin Leibowitz.
I apologize. One moment.
I know that, Benjamin, I know you wanted to comment on the item 5D. You've submitted public comment. This is the time not for that item, but for any item unrelated to that item. I believe you're unmuted, Ben, if you want to go ahead. Ben, we can't hear you, so I don't know if you are speaking or not. Looks like he's brought his hand down. Or did you do that, Georgina?
I didn't. It looks like he is not sure how to speak, although I'm not sure why we can't hear him because he is unmuted.
There are a few comments in the questions pane.
And he says to please continue. And we have another comment from Robert Aaron.
Very good, Mr. Aaron. Go ahead, please. Not sure about the others today on our call, but I cannot hear Mr. Aaron if he's speaking.
Andrew, I suggest we just continue.
Very good. Georgina, anyone else who has their hand up who would like to make comment?
No other hands were raised, so we can continue with the review of the agenda.
Very good. We'll move on to item four, which is the announcement of appeal rights. I want to let everyone know who is listening today that any decision of the hearings officer is appealable to the TRPA Governing Board within 21 days of the hearings officer decision. The application fee and appeal application can be found on the TRPA's website. We'll move on to item five, public hearing items. Before we begin those items, I will point out that I will be serving as the hearings officer today for items 5A, 5B, and 5C, but not for item 5D. Marcia Birch will be serving as the hearings officer today on item 5D. Let's move on to item 5A, the RGB, Select LLC Land Capability Challenge, located at 6730 Westlake Boulevard, Placer County, California. The assessor's parcel number is 098-180-011. The TRPA file number for this item is LCAP 2020-0431. Julie Roll, this is your agenda item. Can you please give us a brief introduction on the proposed action?
Sure. Hi, this is Julie Roll. And I just want to start by saying that this project was reviewed on behalf of TRPA by our soils consultant, Phil Scholes. He's on the line today if we have any questions for him or need him to explain any of the technical side of the report. I've not received any public comment regarding this item. No change to the staff report itself, but I did want to put on the record that we do have a revised version of Attachment D, which is the soils report that was prepared by an independent soils consultant. And it doesn't actually change any of the information related to this parcel that's involved in the Land Capability Challenge. But the original report that was included and posted online has information about the adjacent parcel with a bunch of strikethroughs and in red. So the revision of that attachment just removes that the text, which has been crossed out anyway. So just wanted to point that out.
Thank you, Julie. Phil Scholes, I believe I heard you check in before our meeting was beginning. Can you please give us a summary of what you found on the parcel as a result of your investigation?
Yes, this is Phil Scholes. I am a contractor with TRPA. I visited the site last year, not long after the soil consultant, Sid Davis and Denny Churchill, had done a field investigation. They had dug two pits on the property, one sort of on a higher elevation, an older sort of terrace, glacial outwash terrace, and then one sort of lower, closer to lake level, which was more of a terrace formed by high lake levels. And in both of those pits, I was able to examine them and see that those are very deep soils. That while they have some rocks in them, they're much less rockier than the soil type that's mapped for that. In addition to that, the map soil type is known to have a layer fairly deep in the soil that restricts roots and purchase waters. And that layer was not present. And without that layer, it, one, doesn't match the map soil type. And second of all, it makes the soil, without that sort of hard, brittle layer, it makes the soil have much higher capability. So what was found was that the soil didn't match either the Talac series or several other soil series that are sort of known to be in that vicinity. And so it falls to a unnamed soil type, which we call triple X for in the basin. And it met all the requirements for a class four, where the slopes are 16 to 30% slope, or class six, which is 0 to 16%. And in the staff report, we have a small table that shows how the land capability challenge is changing what was mapped as originally as Class 5 is now split between Class 4 and Class 6. In addition to that, there is a small amount of beach area that's classifies as Class 1B. And most of that's all encompassed within the back shore area that also is designated Class 1B.
Thank you, Phil. I appreciate your explanation in referencing our table that's in the staff report. I've reviewed the report that as amended, as Julie mentioned, as well as the information in the staff report and the land capability map on top of the existing, essentially existing topography and existing features. I don't have any further questions. What I'd like to do is ask if we have anyone on the line today who's representing the applicant who could offer their input.
Good afternoon, Mr. Strain. This is Wyatt Ogilvy in representation of RGB Select. We've reviewed the staff report and the conclusions. I was on site with Mr. Davis and as well as with Phil Scholes, and we agree with the conclusions and findings. I was just going to note the redactions or red lines from the Davis soils investigation related to the other properties were made as those applications, which my understanding from the site meeting with Mr. Scholes verified that those parcels don't contain any stream environment zone. But since that those can be addressed at staff level is the basis of those changes to the Davis report, as those will be addressed as independent application, not subject to hearing.
Thank you, Wyatt.
This is
go ahead. I'm sorry.
This is Phil Scholes. I just wanted to sort of add to what Wyatt is saying there. We presented that consultant's report with a strikeout. We were trying to minimize confusion because the consultant was hired to address three parcels, and this land capability challenge is only for one parcel. The strikeout does not infer there's anything wrong with the consultant report. It simply was just not pertinent to this one parcel. And that's why, as Julie mentioned at the beginning, we have a replacement report where the consultant really in about 10 minutes just removed a bunch of lines and reprinted the report and made a PDF. And so I wanted to make sure as part of the record that there was nothing inferring that something was wrong about that report. It was just geared for a larger group of parcels.
Very good. Thank you, Phil, for clarifying that. At this point, I will open the public hearing and ask Georgina to look for a show of hands of anyone who would like to provide input or testimony on this agenda item. Georgina?
Members of the public who would like to address the hearings officer may do so at this time by utilizing the hand-raising feature of the GoToWebinar app. The hand icon is located on the tab to the left of the GoToWebinar control panel. If you'd like to comment, please raise your hand and I will announce and unmute you, and you'll have 3 minutes to make your comments. I think we may have a comment from Robert Aaron. Robert, you are unmuted.
I'm not able to hear Mr. Aaron if he is in fact speaking right now. Can anyone else hear him?
I cannot.
Okay. Georgina, two lines.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Oh, very, very, very sorry. I had just had some problems. I am calling on the cell tower on Ski Run, and I'm sorry. I think I must be on the agenda. And I had lowered my hand, actually. I was having problems with my phone. I'm very sorry about that.
Thank you, Mr. Aaron. Appreciate the clarification.
Okay, very sorry about
Georgina, any other hands raised?
There are no other hands raised, so we can continue with the review of this agenda item.
Thank you. At this point, I will close the public hearing and take action on the project. And before I do, I want to make one clarification that Julie and I have worked on with the aid of council too. In our required motions in the staff report, the required motion number one included a finding of no significant effect. And it's my understanding that for this specific action, we do not need to make a finding of no significant effect. So if John or Julie, please correct me if I'm wrong about that, but I think we can leave that part out of a motion.
That's correct.
Thank you, John. Based on the information that's contained in the staff report, including the reports as revised that Phil walked us through, the findings and the rationales on which they are based, I will approve the findings for this land capability challenge. And secondly, we'll approve the land capability challenge as presented that's contained in the body of the staff report. Let's move on to agenda item 5B. That's the Abrams Historic Residential Building demolition and rebuild, located at 687 Lakeview Boulevard, Douglas County, Nevada. The assessor's parcel number is 131810-310-018. The TRPA file number is ERSP2021-0718. Brandy McMahon, will you please give us a brief introduction and summary of the proposed action in your review?
Yes, yeah, so John Abrams is proposing to demolish an existing cabin listed as a contributing property to the Zephyr Cove Historic District Unit Number 1 and construct a new single family dwelling at 687 Lakeview Boulevard in Douglas County, Nevada. To mitigate the removal of the cabin, Mr. Abrams is proposing or has submitted a resource recovery plan prepared by a registered historian. This plan was submitted and accepted by the Nevada State Historic Preservation Office. The proposed new home has been designed to be architecturally compatible with the surrounding community. It was noted at a pre-meeting I had with the hearings officer regarding this project that the height findings for structures over 26 feet in height were not included in the staff report. But the applicant did make those findings, their findings from section 37.5.7 in the TRPA code. I did provide those findings to the hearings officer, and they are part of the electronic application available on the Lake Tahoe Info parcel tracker. This project is before you today because the demolition of a historic resource requires review and approval by the TRPA hearings officer. TRPA staff is recommending of approval of the project. And then here today to represent Mr. Abrams is Jennifer Kwasnick, a planning consultant, and then Natalia Wisewick with Ben Fagan Design. And they're available if you have any questions. And I'm available if you have any questions.
Thank you, Brandy. A question for John Marshall as our counsel. The Chapter 37 height findings for the additional building height in this application, are those findings that need to be made by the staff and or the hearings officer as part of this review?
I'm going to defer to Brandy. Do you know the answer to that question, Brandy?
They're not. The reason we're here today before the hearings officer is because it's a historic structure. But I did want to just note because Mr. Strain brought it up in our pre-meeting that those findings were made by the applicant. And those typically are findings that are reviewed by staff and approved at a staff level.
Very good. Thank you, Brandy. I did have a chance to review the application, including the resource recovery plan that was prepared by outside consultant. I was very impressed with the thoroughness and the level of detail and information that was presented in that resource recovery plan. That's one of the better ones I've read in my review capacity. I thought that was a terrific report. It was well done. Do we have a representative? I heard Jennifer and Natalia. Do you have any comments to offer on this project?
Oh, hello, this is Jennifer Kwasnik. And yeah, I just want to say I've reviewed the staff report and agree with the findings. And I think that Natalia and crew have done an excellent job of capturing some of the old Tahoe rustic and the new design as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer. I've got a question for Natalia, but wanted to give her an opportunity to speak first if she'd like to.
Nope, I'm ready for your questions.
Can you please describe for us the specific design elements that you've incorporated into this proposed design to complement the theme and the character of the Zephyr Cove number one historic neighborhood for the Tahoe Summer, I believe it is, the Tahoe Summer cabin style of design that's referenced in the planetary statement and also in our staff report. Can you talk a little bit about, Natalia, what specific design elements you've used from that to help with the fit and feel of this new design?
Yes, absolutely. So one of the kind of more impressive things about the owner and his desire with this new home in particular is to sort of maintain that same look. So the original cabin is a fairly small log with, you know, a steep pitched roof. We are incorporating natural logs into the new design as well. They are going to be a pretty major design feature to sort of incorporate that historic look. It is a larger home, but what we see in Zephyr Cove in particular is there are quite a few larger homes as well that were used more like summer compounds in a way. So, you know, this home sort of fits that idea. We are also going with a much more traditional Tahoe steep pitch roof throughout the entire home rather than sort of this mountain modern that we've been seeing around Tahoe. Use of wood on the decks is once again something that's sort of traditional. Everything's going to be supported with log. There are stucco elements throughout, but they will be dark brown to blend in with the natural surroundings. And we are using some metal accents on the roof to further kind of reflect on the original cabin.
Natalia, where are you using the natural logs that you mentioned?
Are you looking at the plans at all?
I think we can bring them up on screen.
So the elevations, I think, do a pretty good job of showing where the logs are being utilized.
And Georgina and or others are getting us to that point now.
Sure. I think it's particularly prevalent if you look on the front elevation, which will be at the street side. And this is, we are going to be moving the home to the uphill portion of the site rather than the downhill. So at street level, it will be a one-story residence essentially. And the logs are expressed all around the garage, at the entry, and as supporting members for the side roofs. I see the plans are kind of making their way through.
Do you have a page number for that?
Sure, A5, A6, and A7.
Brandy, do you have a page number for that? Our page numbers are different.
Gotcha. I think it'll be probably like page 6 or 7. It's pretty early in there.
I am looking at the packet and it's page 29 of the packet.
That's a little different. There we go. So, Mr. Hearings Officer, so you can kind of see it here on the right elevation. The logs are supporting the decks in the rear. You can also see them expressed at the entry supporting the entry roof. The little side entrance, all of the gable roofs around the sides, anywhere we have any sort of cantilever and more posts supporting it, those are all going to be natural logs. Below that, the front elevation, like I was mentioning earlier, is one story at the street side, and that garage and the entry are surrounded by logs, log features. And then you can see more of that on the next page as well, which includes the other elevations.
Georgina, if we can, let's go to the next page, please.
Sure. And then additionally, you can see there's quite a bit of stonework around the base. That is proposed to be all natural granite sourced at the site itself.
Thank you, Natalia.
Absolutely. And actually, I did make a mistake. I must have been thinking of another project. The horizontal siding is not stucco. It is going to be a fiber cement board, but it's, you know, that's mostly for the fire rating, but it is going to look like wood.
I don't have any further questions, Natalia or Jennifer, any other comments on your part?
No, thank you for your time. And yeah, appreciate the consideration.
With that, I will open the public hearing on this item and ask Georgina to look for a show of hands for anyone who would like to provide input or testimony on this item. Georgina?
Members of the public who would like to address the hearings officer may do so at this time by utilizing the hand-raising feature of the GoToWebinar app. The hand icon is located on the tab to the left of the GoToWebinar control panel. If you'd like to comment, please raise your hand and I will announce and unmute you, and you'll have 3 minutes to make your comments. No hands were raised, so we can continue with the review of this agenda item.
Thank you, Georgina. Given that, I will close the public hearing on this item and take action on it. Based on the findings that are contained in our staff report and the rationale on which they are based, specifically Chapter 4 and I believe Chapter 67, we do not need to make the Chapter 37 findings, as we've clarified, Chapter 4 being the threshold findings, Chapter 67, the historic resource protection findings, and a finding of no significant effect. I will approve the findings and the rationale on which they are based, and further, I will approve the project as it's been proposed, subject to the conditions that are contained in the draft permit, which is attached as part of our staff report. Let's move on to item 5C, the Fallen Leaf Lodge Homeowners Association Shoreline Protective Structure, located at 421 Fallen Leaf Road, Fallen Leaf Lake, California. The assessor's parcel number is 021-420-055. The TRPA file number is ERSP2021-0751. Paul Nielsen, will you please introduce this item and give us a summary of the project?
Sure. Yeah, this project, Andrew, involves the construction of a shoreline protective structure at the south end of Fallen Leaf Lake. It's fairly small in scale compared to the ones we normally see being constructed on Lake Tahoe. The need for the revetment is related to some minor wave action, but also erosion caused by pedestrians sort of walking down this slope that at one time had a revetment, but it's been degraded over time. As a result, we have some exposed roots from some of the mature vegetation along the bank. So this project is reconstructing what was there, introducing new rock to again stabilize and protect the area from erosion. No changes to the project, except clarifications to the staff report. There's a series of photos at the end of the staff report. And photo 3 references adjacent shoreline to the east of the project area, but that photo is actually referencing the west end of the project area. And then photo six, it says view to the east, and it's actually a view to the west. So just some minor changes there. No public comment received in response to the notices that were sent to surrounding property owners. And that's all I have.
Very good. Thank you, Paul. Do we have a representative of the project applicant on the line today?
This is Joanne Michael with Resource Concepts. I was assisting the Homeowners Association in preparation of this permit application, and just wanted to just say that from the original submittal, there's just a minor modification to include some additional linear footage because since the time we originally did our first site visit and assessment, there has been continued erosion, and that is why we have really been pushing and working with TRPA to get this project approved so that we can get something in place this fall and not let it go another 9 months before we can get some kind of stabilization in there. And so I just want to really thank Paul Nielsen for taking charge of this after it had kind of been in limbo for a few months, and glad that it made it here today and hope that it all gets approved.
Thank you, Joanne. Question for Paul. The proposal of approximately 65 linear feet for the reconstructed revetment, that includes the additional length that Joanne referred to, is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. My other question for Paul is, we need to make in this project the special use findings that are spelled out, I think maybe in a couple of different code chapters here for this particular one along the shoreline. And Paul, can you just talk for a minute briefly about the special use determination that you have made and are proposing?
Sure. As is required for all shoreline protected structures, whether it be on Tahoe or Fallen Leaf Lake, there are three findings. I refer to as special use findings. They're also referred to as sort of neighborhood compatibility findings that relate to ensuring that the scale and nature of the project is consistent with the surrounding development, that it won't be disturbing to the health, safety, or welfare of persons or property in the neighborhood, and that it won't be detrimental to the land use in the area, that it won't conflict with the plan area statements and the findings that staff report provide evidence upon which those findings are made. They relate to this shoreline revetment being very small in nature and in scale with the surrounding development. It will not serve to deflect energy to other parts of the shoreline, and is consistent with the plan area statement and planning direction for that statement. Encourages mitigation where appropriate. This is a form of mitigation to protect against impacts to water quality by stabilizing the shoreline.
Very good. Thank you, Paul. I want to just touch on, and I'll open the public hearing, I want to touch on a comment that Joanne made about wanting to get this project installed this year, is what I heard. Given that we're at October the 14th, is that going to be possible?
Yeah, Andrew, we, due to the Calder fire and the impacts of that fire to just people being able to pursue projects, whether their offices were closed, or in the case of Fallen Leaf Lake, we've got pretty substantial, evacuation order that was in place. And so we are being flexible this year in regard to allowing projects to commence on or after the 15th, where there is a specific environmental need to, you know, address environmental concerns. And so this project will qualify, and if they submit a grading season exception and document the need, we anticipate approving and allowing construction to occur after the 15th, weather permitting.
Thank you, Paul. No question, it's been an unusual year. At this point, I'd like to open the public hearing and see if there is anyone who would like to offer input or public comment on this item. Georgina, will you please look for a show of hands?
Members of the public who would like to address the hearings officer may do so at this time by utilizing the hand-raising feature of the GoToWebinar app. The hand icon is located on the tab to the left of the GoToWebinar control panel. If you'd like to comment, please raise your hand and I will announce and unmute you, and you'll have 3 minutes to make your comments. We have a hand raised by Michelle Gamble.
Yes, good afternoon, Michelle.
Michelle, it says that you are self-muted. Michelle, are you able to unmute yourself?
Joanne, this is Paul. Do you know what Michelle's question might be?
I have no idea.
I'm not able to hear Michelle. I don't know if anyone else on our call is.
Michelle, you should be unmuted now.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, perfect. Sorry about that. Andrew, I just wanted to provide a little bit of additional information regarding the construction. The Homeowners Association has already has a contractor on board who has stockpiled material. So as long as the weather conditions hold and we can get a grading exemption, we anticipate the work to take less than 2 weeks to do. And so the homeowners are ready to move on this. One of the big concerns is there is an STPUD sanitary sewer force main in the adjacent path, and we really want to make sure that that's protected. So I just wanted to give you that information that they are ready to move. It's not something where they have to go out to bid. They are ready to have a contractor begin work as soon as they have approval.
Thank you, Michelle. Anything else?
That's it. Thank you.
Georgina, do we have anyone else who would like to offer testimony at this point or input?
No other hands were raised, so we can continue with the review of this agenda item.
Thank you. Given that, I will close the public hearing for this item and take action on it. Based on the information that's contained in the staff report, including the required findings and the rationale on which they are based, and that includes Chapter 4, Chapter 21, Chapter 80, Chapter 81, Chapter 84, and finally Chapter 85, and including a finding of no significant effect, I will approve the findings as just listed, including the FONSI. And secondly, I will approve the project based on the staff report and subject to the conditions that are found in the draft permit, and wish you the best to get this installed while the weather's good and we have clear skies and the flexibility that Paul mentioned. Thank you. At this time, I will step down and hand off to Marcia Birch to undertake and lead the discussion and action on item 5D. Marcia, thank you very much for stepping in on this one.
Thank you, Andrew. Good afternoon. My name is Marcia Birch, and I will be the hearings officer today for item 5D, Verizon Gilliam New Cellular Monopine Cellular Tower at 1360 Ski Run Boulevard, City of South Lake Tahoe, as TRPA file number ERSP209-0389. The appeal rights described by Mr. Strain under item 4 on the agenda apply to this item as well. The decision on this item may be appealed to the TRPA Governing Board. I have reviewed the staff report, the alternatives analysis, and the initial environmental checklist. I have reviewed the numerous public comments received, as well as information submitted by the applicant. I have also reviewed legal authorities discussed in the public comments. In order to keep things organized this afternoon, we will be following a format that will allow all interested parties to participate. We will begin with a presentation by TRPA staff. Then we will receive a presentation by the project applicant, followed by a presentation by a representative for a number of individuals and entities opposing the project. And that will be followed by public comments. So Bridget Cornell is the planner on this item. So we'll begin with a staff report from Bridget.
Thank you, Marcia. Again, this is Bridget Cornell. I am an associate planner in the current planning department at TRPA. Again, like Marcia mentioned, the item that is before you, actually, can I just confirm that everybody can hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, perfect, great, thanks. So this item, there is a proposal for a new cellular tower proposed at 1360 Ski Run Boulevard in South Lake Tahoe. This project is proposed as a transmission and receiving facility, which in this plan area statement is permissible as a special use. Because it is a special use, we have to make the special use findings, and it is required to come to to be approved by the hearings officer. So that is why it is being presented today. The actions eventually that will be requested is a motion to approve the findings contained in the staff summary and a finding of no significant effect, as well as a motion to approve the project itself. So I'll go into a little bit of detail, the TRPA details on the project itself. The applicant will get into further detail regarding specifics about the project. So it is a 112-foot tall cellular tower that will be a monopine design, designed to look similar to the Jeffrey Pine surrounding it on this particular parcel. The parcel is approximately 1.9 acres. So again, the tower will be approximately 112 feet tall. There are currently proposed 8 cellular antennas on the tower for use by Verizon Wireless. The tower is designed in a manner that it could eventually accommodate a second provider, but that is not a part of the current proposal. The parcel itself is comprised of a combination of land capability Class 1A and Class 1B. 18,972 square feet of land coverage have been verified on the parcel as legally existing. All the activity related to the tower and the associated equipment shelter will take place in Class 1A. Approximately, I believe it's 789 square feet of Class 1A coverage will be removed, and 736 square feet of coverage will be added to the parcel related to the project. Given those two numbers, there will be 53 square feet of Class 1A coverage banked with the project itself. And I know scenic has been raised as a concern here. One thing I just wanted to point out is that an additional item that has been incorporated into the draft permit that can be found in the staff summary. We did add a scenic monitoring requirement to assure for a certain period of time that the tower is maintained in a condition that is consistent with the way that it was approved. You know, we want to make sure the branches are maintained, to be visually appealing. So we did, that was something that was added just to assure that the scenic quality is maintained. I know a lot of you are familiar with the history on this project, but the city of South Lake Tahoe has approved the project. It was initially approved in mid-2019. That decision was appealed and taken to these cities, to the city council. The city council upheld their original review. So it is, it has been fully approved at the city. At the city of South Lake Tahoe. TRPA, after receiving the application in 2019, sent out a notice of application, and we did receive some inquiries at the time that have been addressed over time. When we, the meeting notice that was sent out for this hearings officer meeting today, I received approximately 27 comments on that, on the project itself. Those are contained, they've been added to the record for the file, and we've attempted to make them accessible on the link from our website as well. Two of those were actually in support of the project, and the rest, most of the rest were in opposition, and all that material has been reviewed as part of the TRPA review of the project. So I would like to now pass it off to Michelle Duarte, who represents the applicant, and she will go into further detail about the project itself, but I am available for any questions that come up later in the hearing. Thank you.
Thank you, Bridget. So Michelle, you are representing the applicant today, and I'd like to clarify that you will have 20 minutes to present regarding the project, and if you'd like to hold some of that time back in order to respond to any issues that are raised in opposition, we can go ahead and hold some of that time back for you if you'd like.
Yes, we would like to do that. It'll be myself and Charlie Schwartz presenting at first at around 10 minutes, and then we'd like to reserve the next 10 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay, thank you. And Georgina will keep the time, and she'll let you know when it's time to wrap up that first 10 minutes.
Okay.
So please go ahead.
Hello, my name is Michelle Duarte with SAC Wireless on behalf of Verizon Wireless presenting the Ski Run Boulevard facility in South Lake Tahoe, El Dorado County. We appreciate this opportunity to present our project to the TRPA. As Bridget mentioned, this application is for the installation of a new wireless facility on Ski Run Boulevard. Alongside me are panelists from Verizon Wireless, Hammond and Edison, and McKenzie Allbritton LLP. Page 2, please. First, we will note the application timeline. In January 2017, Verizon and their radio frequency engineers identified a significant gap in the Heavenly Valley and Bijou Park areas of South Lake Tahoe. This deficiency in coverage will be discussed in more detail by Charlie Schwartz. Between 2017 and March 2018, there was a full investigation of 17 sites for alternative site locations, including any co-locations available. By June 2018, a site location was selected, lease negotiations ensued, and site design occurred. An application was filed with the City of South Lake Tahoe Planning Department, and the special use permit was approved in June 2019. Then an appeal was filed. From June to December 2019, Verizon investigated an additional 15 sites proposed by the city and the appellants for alternate locations. January 2020, there was an appeal hearing with the City of South Lake Tahoe upholding the approval decision from the Planning Department. February 2020, TRPA asked for a coverage analysis of existing land coverage of the property, and in October 2020, as a result of trees being removed on the landlord's property, new photo sims were created by Verizon to capture an accurate representation of the project. Next page, please. Prior to January 14th, 2021, Verizon did receive confirmation from the city that the special use permit was utilized and would not expire. After extensive comparison and a resurvey on the landlord's property, in February 2021, a land coverage letter prepared by a land use planning expert was provided to TRPA, and this coverage analysis was approved in May 2021. In June 2021, the TRPA application and requested documentation were resubmitted. Next page, please. This page has all 32 of the alternative site locations mapped out, including those proposed by the city and the appellant. Verizon first begins their search trying to find co-locatable towers in the area. Two towers were located near the search objective, but both of these existing sites were still too distant. One was 1.2 miles southeast of the proposed facility, and one was 1.2 miles west which is the Tahoe PD site. Both sites would lack a strong LTE signal for the ski run facility's significant gap area. Lacking any nearby co-location opportunities, Verizon then moves on to the next best locations that will provide adequate coverage while taking into account zoning code requirements and the community's needs, all while minimizing scenic impact on the surrounding areas and mitigating the site as much as possible in order to meet the project's needs. Verizon investigated existing structures, as well as commercial properties, businesses, vacant lots, and jurisdictional parcels. None of these alternate locations were best suited for the Ski Run Boulevard facility's objective due to the following reasons. Next page, please. Over 25 alternate sites were not feasible due to height, distance, or elevation of the proposed sites, and several were discounted due to excessive visual impact with tower heights above the proposed project's height, discounted due to construction issues, lack of ground space for a tower, structural limitations, lack of landlord interest and response, proximity to high-density residential, lack of new access road, TRPA land coverage requirements, requirements for tree removal, and easements. Again, co-locatable structures that were over a mile away are current Verizon sites, and they will not serve the coverage objective. These towers are not possible to modify to reach Verizon's coverage goals. Next page, please. The proposed facility is on a 1.9-acre parcel that has been thoughtfully designed to minimize any impact to the adjacent community. Verizon will conceal its panel antennas within a 112-foot tower facility, camouflaged as a pine tree. Antennas will be concealed with faux foliage and branches, and the branches will extend beyond and above antennas, providing a realistic tapered crown. The tree pole will be placed within a 624-square-foot leased area next to a new equipment shelter designed as a small shed with a pitched roof and slatted siding. The shed will be replacing an existing shed and still have the aesthetic you see here in the picture with the green and white coloring. Behind the shed, away from the road, a backup generator will provide continued service in case of power outages, or emergencies. The proposed facility will provide a new reliable in-building coverage to the Heavenly Valley and Bijou Park areas, plus additional new in-vehicle coverage to the larger area. It will also provide new network capacity to relieve the existing network that is reaching capacity exhaustion. This analysis will be further discussed with Charlie Schwartz. In addition to Verizon's ability to blend into the natural surroundings, as Bridget stated, TRPA has implemented a COA that states that they must approve the scenic quality of the tower. TRPA staff will inspect the tower every 2 years for the first 10 years. These inspection reviews of the quality and coloring of the branches and bark of the tower. If not up to TRPA standards, Verizon will make improvements to bring the tower to a level consistent with original approval. Next page, please. Again, this proposed location achieves the goal to service the community while also minimizing the number of towers in the city by being designed to house a co-locatable carrier. A future carrier can be seen here with a center line of 90 feet, if we can zoom out. AT&T is present today and confirmed their interest in the co-locatable project. The proposed height allows Verizon Wireless and another future carrier to both reach coverage objectives while still blending into the scenic quality of the area. There is minimal impact at this height. This height is needed for coverage to reach above the trees and is the minimal height required to house another carrier. This height will also benefit a fire camera, and that has become increasingly important these days. To recap, there will be less towers in the city with a co-locatable structure. This proposed project is placed in an area with a substantial amount of tall trees, and our limited height has no significant scenic impact. There is no less intrusive alternative that has been investigated by the city, Verizon, or proposed by the opponent that would benefit the community and Verizon's objectives, regardless of the code being proposed now or when it was researched in 2019. Next page, please. We'll now pass it on to Verizon Radio Frequency Manager, Charlie Schwartz.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Charlie Schwartz. Can you hear me?
Yes, hello, we can hello. Hear you.
Yes,
all right, great. All right, good afternoon. I'm the RF Design Engineering Manager for the Tahoe Basin. I have 25 plus years experience in telecommunication network design. I take care of Northern California and Northern Nevada, the Northern California, Northern Nevada markets. And also, I've been personally involved in the network improvements for the Tahoe Basin for the last 8 years. From a network point of view, the Tahoe Basin is a large challenge due to the terrain, the mountains, the pine trees, and the very large number of people that visit the area on any given day. I will be showing you some engineering data to support our highly needed Ski Run Boulevard site. Next page, please. This chart shows live data, empirical data from our switch for the South Lake Tahoe area. This area covers from state line to Myers. This is daily megabyte volume over the last 26 months. You can see how demand peaks and valleys from day to day, but shows a consistent increase in usage. As the chart shows, we have consistent high peaks during the 4th of July, Labor Day, and New Year's Eve. It's our job to make sure that the network performs at all times, during the average use periods and during the high demand periods. Over the last 2 years, we've seen a growth of 137%, which is more than double, and demand would triple every 36 months, which is higher than the national average. Next page. This chart is the same live data for the same area with a different view. It shows monthly demand, month over month, year over year. As noted, you can see the high 2 year growth for May, June, July of 2021 at 162, 138, and 126. Next page. Here's a map of the South Lake Tahoe area where our proposed ski run site is planned. The map on the left is our existing coverage, and the map on the right is our existing coverage with ski run being added. So let's focus on the left side for a minute. You can see Lake Tahoe. The orange dots are existing macros, the pink dots are existing small cells, the blue dots are future macros. So if you look in the center of the square, you can see a little blue dot there for Ski Run Boulevard. And to the right of that, you can see a little blue dot for Tahoe Seasons, which are future planned. And the red dot is a DAS. In the upper right of the square, you can see the Harris Harvey Casino areas. There's lots of little triangles there. The red triangle facing south is the serving sector from Harrah's that serves the ski run area. On the left side, center low on this left square, you can see our Tahoe PD macro with the three brownish sectors. The ski run areas, or this area, is currently served by Harrah's Casino site, which is about a mile and a half to the northeast, and our Tahoe PD site, which is a mile and a half to the west. The ski run site location, the little blue dot in the middle, is currently served by our Harrah's Casino, which is on top of the Harrah's Casino and is showing signs of capacity limitations. The green areas on the map represent indoor or in-home coverage, which shows where expected coverage is available if you're inspect.
That's 10 minutes.
Should I continue, Michelle?
Yes.
The green areas on the map represent indoor or in-home coverage. This shows where expected coverage is available inside your home if you're working from home, or if your children are doing schoolwork, or if you're researching information on the internet. The yellow area represents in-vehicle coverage. This shows where expected coverage is for available inside your car. And the gray areas represent outdoor coverage. This shows where expected coverage is available as you walk down the sidewalk. Looking at the two maps, you can clearly see where the significant gap is. The gray and yellow area to the west and the east of the blue ski run dot, and how the new site resolves those gaps. Next page, please.
That's about 10 minutes so far.
So I think we'll go maybe 12 on this one and 8 on the next one, if that's okay?
That's fine.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. All right, so this is the same map, the same view, same area, but it shows the Tahoe season site active on the right-hand side. You can see the Tahoe season site does not solve the significant gap in the ski run area. Next page. This map shows the same area with both ski run and Tahoe seasons active on the right-hand side. You can see how these two sites complement each other and resolve different significant gaps in the network. Next page. All right, so this will end this section. Thank you very much for your time. The next section will be handled by Paul Albritton and Raj Mather. Thank you.
Thank you both for that presentation. I believe that Greg Lean is on the line to provide comments on behalf of citizens opposing the project.
Good afternoon. I think what we have here is a team approach, and I think we're going to start with comments from my colleague and co-counsel, Julian Gresser.
Okay, and what I'd like to ask is that we limit this to 20 minutes, and you can divide that among yourselves. If you wouldn't mind identifying those that you're speaking on behalf of today.
Yes, so I'm Julian Gresser. Our first speaker will be Monica Eisenstecken, followed by attorney Robert Berg. Then I'll add a few comments myself and we'll wrap up with Greg Lean. What we would like to do is reserve 5 minutes at the end for rebuttal to the rebuttal, if that's okay with the panel.
Well, yes, we'll go ahead and do that. I'd also like to confirm that those that you're speaking on behalf of today will not also be providing additional comments in the public comment period.
That's correct.
Okay. All right. Then we'll have Georgina time for 15 minutes and we'll reserve 5 for you to follow up after the applicant's response.
Yes. Thank you very much. So Monica Eisenstecken, please offer a few comments.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, great. I just wanted to first express all the support of the thousands of people that oppose the destruction of Lake Tahoe by the telecoms. Let me ask, how many of you want a tower next to your house, 150 feet from your children's bedrooms? I bet none of you. There's a reason why towers do not belong near people's homes or by schools. There is a much safer alternative and one that doesn't destroy the environment or destroy the lives of people. I was born and raised here in Lake Tahoe, and I love the natural beauty and the clean air. I have put more than 2 years of my life and significant money into protecting our home that my 82-year-old father built for his grandchildren. We were forced to sell our home at a significant loss because it is uninhabitable. I'm extremely furious that our city is allowing our community and environment to get destroyed by these extremely dangerous towers only for money. I thought that you wanted to protect this beautiful place, Lake Tahoe. Thank you. And I will hand it over to my attorneys. Thank you.
So next, Robert Berg.
Good afternoon. I'm Robert Berg of the Law Office of Robert J. Berg, based in Scarsdale, New York. I'm co-counsel for the objectors, Monica Eisenstecken and David Benedict. Verizon's multi-year effort to site its proposed 112-foot-tall monopine cell tower has extracted an enormous toll on residents of the immediate surrounding residential neighborhood. The toll has been physical, emotional, and monetary. The massive record before you provides evidence of the substantial visual insult this soaring metallurgical monstrosity will cut high above the majestic Heavenly Mountain tree line, destroying the pristine viewsheds that attracted residents to live in the neighborhood and visitors to the area. Scores of residents and neighbors have spoken or written against this tower at multiple hearings before the South Lake Tahoe City Planning Commission and the City Council, and during public comment at TRPA meetings since early 2019. They've raised serious health concerns about the risks of living in very close proximity to a tall cell tower, which would transmit wireless radiation unwillingly upon them 24 hours per day, 7 days per week. They've condemned the visual degradation the tower will cause to this world-renowned viewshed. They worry about the environmental harm the tower will cause to the flora and fauna, leading ultimately to the intensified impairment of Lake Tahoe's water quality. Residents have begged Verizon to pick a less intrusive site for a tower and urged the city to deny the required special use permit. Verizon cares not a whit about local residents of South Lake Tahoe, nor about the devastating impact of its rapid densification of its wireless network throughout the Lake Tahoe region on the health of Tahoe's residents or on the environment. Verizon cares only about one thing, making money for itself. Yet here we are today at the TRPA public hearing to consider Verizon's application. I'm here to tell you that Verizon, for all its money and its high-priced legal team, has blown its opportunity to move forward with this hearing. Why? Because Verizon has let its special use permit issued by the City of South Lake Tahoe expire. Without a current in-place special use permit from the City of South Lake Tahoe for this tower, TRPA cannot issue its own permit. The special use permit issued by the City of South Lake Tahoe was for a one-year period only, expiring at the end of that period if not utilized. It was a use-it-or-lose-it permit. Verizon simply did nothing at all to advance this project for over 1 year after receiving the special use permit, and by its express terms, the special use permit has lapsed. Let me briefly walk you through what's happened. On or about March 22, 2019, Verizon filed a general planning application for a special use permit with the City of South Lake Tahoe Development Services Department Planning Division. On June 13, 2019, the City of South Lake Tahoe Planning Commission held a public hearing to address the application. It approved the special use permit by a 3-1 vote. And on June 25th, the City of South Lake Tahoe issued the special use permit. The special use permit includes a general condition. This special use permit shall expire and become null and void 1 year after the date of granting, unless such issuance is utilized prior to the date of expiration. On or about June 28, 2019, Verizon Wireless accepted the conditions forth in the special use permit. On June 27, 2019, Ms. Eisenstecken filed an appeal of the Planning Commission decision approving the special use permit. Pursuant to the South Lake Tahoe City Code, appeals of such decisions are heard by the South Lake Tahoe City Council. Ultimately, the appeal hearing took place on January 14th, 2020, at which time, and during the period between August 6th, 2019 and January 6th, 2020, more than 3,800 pages of documents and comments were submitted to the City Council by opponents of the cell tower. These documents and comments are part of the record herein. On January 14th, 2020, the South Lake Tahoe City Council conducted its hearing. Following a 3-hour hearing and deliberation, the City Council voted 3-2 to deny the appeal and uphold the special use permit. So the special use permit was, for purposes of this utilization, was granted on January 14, 2020. Now, Verizon did nothing for the intervening 1-year period to move this forward. Condition 3 to the special use permit provides the special use permit shall expire and become null and void 1 year after the date of granting, unless such variance is utilized prior to the date of expiration. So we are looking at the 1-year period starting January 14th, which expired 2020, which expired on January 14th, 2021. Under California law, land use and zoning statutes often provide that variances and special permits automatically expire at 1 year unless used during that 1-year period. The purpose of the 1-year automatic expiration is to prevent reserving the use of land for future purposes when one has no present intention to commence upon the permitted use. Although a permittee need not comply with every condition in the use permit in order to avoid expiration after 1 year, the permittee must take some affirmative good faith action in employing the permit within that 1-year period. This is black letter law in California, perhaps best articulated in the California Court of Appeals decision in Upton versus Gray, 269 California App 2nd 352. That holding has been cited numerous times since, including in Community Development Commission of Mendocino County versus City of Fort Bragg, 204 Cal App 3rd 1124, and in Morgan versus County of San Diego, 19 Cal App 3rd 636. The due diligence construction of utilize, besides being required under Upton versus Gray, is fully consistent with TRPA practice. The TRPA's Code of Ordinances sets a 3-year strict expiration period for TRPA approvals and imposes a due diligence requirement literally set in concrete. That's set forth in Code Section 2.2.4 and defines commencement of construction as, quote, the pouring of concrete for a foundation or work of a similar nature upon the permitted structure. Commencement of construction does not include grading, plan preparation, installation of utilities, or landscaping, end of quote. So although Verizon may have transmitted a copy of the special use permit to TRPA within the 1-year period following its issuance, the mere transmittal of a copy of a permit does not meet the legal test in California for utilizing a permit for the purpose of avoiding its expiration under Upton versus Gray. Otherwise, a special permit holder can reserve the use of land intended for a specific purpose almost indefinitely without having to diligently pursue all the steps necessary to complete the project. And that's exactly the sin that Verizon has committed here. For over a year and a half after receiving the special use permit, following this tortuous battle with residents, it did nothing. So Verizon's inaction disrupted the lives of neighboring residents, has created great anxiety and uncertainty, but Verizon's failure to utilize the permit during the one-year period following its issuance means the permit has expired and it is a nullity. Verizon now has to go back to square one with the city of South Lake Tahoe and apply for a new permit, and the TRPA really has no business doing anything further at this time. Thank you.
Okay, I'll just jump in the interest of time. This is Julian Gresser. I'm a member of the legal team representing the opponents to the Verizon Wireless application, and I'll make five basic points. First, Congress' intent in approving the California-Nevada Interstate Compact was to recognize and to protect the Tahoe region in sacred public trust and to establish the TRPA as its public fiduciary and steward. This public trust is now threatened as never before in this hearing, irreversibly and irrevocably. Second, the Verizon application is clearly made pursuant to a detailed, comprehensive wireless Tahoe technical plan developed over several years through a collaboration among the major wireless purveyors and the Tahoe Prosperity Center, the wireless industry's lobbying arm. Article 7 of the compact explicitly mandates that TRPA prepare a comprehensive environmental impact statement for projects on the scale of this Tahoe wireless plan. The same policy is adopted in TRPA's own regional plan. No Article 7 EIS exists. Thus, there has not been any careful consideration of any of the extensive environmental, health, and fire hazard presented by the Wireless Tahoe Initiative. Notwithstanding that these risks are well documented in the record of numerous public hearings before the city of South Lake Tahoe and the TRPA itself. As explained in detail in the filed opponent statement, the staff report already concedes that the compact is not preempted by the Telecommunications Act of 1996, and therefore the extensive environmental record must be considered by the hearing officer. Third, the Verizon wireless application is an especially egregious example of piecemealing and segmentation. This practice has been strongly disapproved by the federal courts, which have consistently ruled that the arbitrary and capricious standard applies. See Hammond v. Norton 370 Federal Supplement 2nd 226 and the California courts, I quote, Laurel Heights Improvement Association forbids piecemeal review of the significant environmental impacts of the project. It states this standard is consistent with the principle of environmental considerations do not be submerged by chopping a large project up into many little ones, each with minimal impact on the environment, which cumulatively may have a disastrous consequence, quoting Laurel Heights. The most recent federal ruling is Environmental Health Trust, Children's Health Defense versus FCC, which strongly criticized the FCC's practice of issuing conclusionary statements without any record of careful consideration and substantial evidence before it. This same standard applies to the TRPA and its planning staff. Fourth, when we apply these legal principles and framework to the TRPA staff report, its defects are glaring. The TRPA planning staff is supposed to be an environmental investigatory arm of the TRPA, not a rubber stamp of Verizon and the wireless industry. There is no evidence whatsoever in the staff report that it gave any consideration at all to the voluminous record of environmental, health, and fire hazards presented by the present application, which itself is a component of a larger wireless Tahoe plan. Indeed, the TRP has allowed and encouraged piecemealing. The staff report compounds this forbidden practice by further disaggregating the present macro tower by treating the environmental risks of each component as de minimis. With this logic, we might as well conclude that a king cobra is benign, not only because by only examining a single scale. Final point, the mega tower proposed is no ordinary RFR EMF emitting destructive tower. It is intended to be a magnet attracting children and tourists to a winter play area, ski resort, where kids will toboggan under it. It will irradiate long-term residents like David Benedict, who are fighting simply to survive serious medical disabilities. A leading oncologist has warned the applicant, Verizon Wireless, that RFR exposure will jeopardize the efficacy of Mr. Benedict's new drug trial. But Verizon has callously dismissed Mr. Benedict's appeal for reasonable accommodation under the Americans with Disabilities Act. The Verizon macro tower will reduce the property value of condominium owners like Gordon Patterson, who in their right mind would want, who in their right mind would want to purchase a condominium under such colossal, under such a colossal, when the harms from RFR EMF are so well documented, measurable, and foreseeable? No. If the Verizon application, which has already lapsed, as my co-counsel Robert Berg has pointed out, if this is approved, Verizon and the other telecoms will take this decision as a legal carte blanche to install whatever, whenever they want. The rule of law will no longer exist in Tahoe, and in its place, all that will matter is political influence and financial muscle. No resident, no family, no with children will be secure. I turn over to Greg Guillen.
Thank you very much, Julian. I want to append one comment to the very succinct presentation by Robert Berg, that being that the lapse of the city permit is fatal to even going back and getting a new one. In the interim, they've approved a new ordinance that would make this site non-conforming. So you can't, even if you were inclined to approve this subject to a reapproval by the city can't reapprove it. It's non-conforming. I've had my law office here at Lake Tahoe for over 40 years, and with due respect, I have never before seen in my 40 years such a blatant abdication of TRPA's primary role as the guardian of Tahoe's fragile environment and its internationally recognized stature for scenic beauty and its legendary pristine water quality. At the heart of our opposition is the staff's dereliction of its duty to look at all of its so-called, and this is kind of a wry irony here, that Article Roman numeral 5G, Article 5G, would be a very important point here. And they go through these 5G findings simply on the basis of a checklist provided by the applicant. Again, as we've said before, you need to provide real evidence. We have no real evidence.
That
it
is
doesn't matter.
15 minutes.
15 minutes now. I'll try to wrap up very, very quickly then. And also, the special use findings are also critical. As to scenic, we want to incorporate by reference our visual simulation and report by Brent Triumphs at the September 30th, 2020 Governing Board. I trust that's in the record. If it's not, we now wish to incorporate that by reference. Of course, this tower goes 42 feet above the existing 70-foot tall tree canopy. It's really an egregious violation in an area that is the most sensitive to scenic degradation in the entire Lake Tahoe Basin. And to ignore that, to me, just seems to be an egregious dereliction of duty. Water quality, paramount. Absolutely crucial to the protection of water quality. Want to draw your attention to a study in the record by an international forestry journal on the impacts of aspens. Aspens, as you may know, have vast interlocking root systems and are absolutely crucial in stripping out nutrients and keeping them from reaching Lake Tahoe. This project is right next to an SEZ, right next to a bunch of residences. It shouldn't be. We need a moratorium starting with this project. We've had moratoriums at Lake Tahoe since the 1980s. We had one that took place in the shore zone for over 35 years, just based upon speculation about the damage to fish habitat. We haven't studied anything about this technology here at Tahoe. When we add new tech like we have now, and in the form of jet skis, it took a year for TRPA to back off and say, okay, we really should look at these new inventions, these jet skis. You guys shut them down, studied it, and worked toward a resolution to an alternative four-stroke engines. That took place. We've got an alternative here. You got to move to fiber optic cable. I know due to time limitations, I'm going to stop there and reserve the remainder for rebuttal to their rebuttal. Thank you for your kind attention to our comments.
Thank you. So I will return to the applicant, and I believe there are, Georgina, how many minutes left? believe 8 minutes.
Eight minutes left.
So I'll go ahead and turn back to the applicant's representatives.
This is Paul Albritton. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. Paul Albritton, outside counsel for Verizon Wireless. Thank you so much, Hearing Officer Brock, for listening to our application today. Okay. I'd like to respond quickly to some of the comments that were made by the attorneys who have filed suit against CRPA. First, with respect to the permit itself, you saw in our early slides that we have, in fact, utilized the permit as indicated by opponents. As indicated by somebody else.
Tell me what it is. Let me just get
I'm sorry. Can you pause the time while somebody else is speaking?
Yes.
Can you still hear me now?
Okay. I can hear you. Thank Georgina, you. Is it possible to mute the others?
Yes.
I got it. It's all done. Go ahead.
Okay.
Paul.
And I thank stopped, you. I did stop the time, so I'll continue now.
Okay. Thank you. So I just wanted to say that we did submit our South Lake Tahoe approval to TRPA. In addition, during the summer of 2020, we worked extensively with TRPA to confirm the land capacity verification with submittals of surveys. We also submitted SIMS, as you heard, in the fall of 2020 in order to redo the scenic review based on the trees that were removed for fire safety. So we absolutely were actively involved in good faith efforts to pursue that permit. And as in the email that was shown on the screen, the city of South Lake Tahoe city attorney confirmed to me by email that we had adequately utilized our permit and that it remained in effect. With respect to, there was some discussion about land capacity, and that's shown in our plans, the second page of our plans. So we absolutely comply with the land capacity requirements for TRPA. In fact, there's an additional 53 square feet of space that of 1A classification space that will be banked as a result of this project. I want to get into the general issue of the cabal that the opponents allege that the Tahoe Prosperity Center and the wireless industry is supposedly carpet bombing Tahoe with wireless facilities in a piecemeal fashion. This is, of course, false. Each tower is important and independent unto itself in providing coverage to a specific area. The definition of piecemealing is that one part of an application is required for the subsequent part, and that is not the case. Each tower that Verizon Wireless installs is designed to provide coverage to a particular area. I think opponents confuse this with cumulative impacts, but even with respect to cumulative impacts, Robinson versus San Francisco case confirms that the facilities have to be somehow affecting each other aesthetically or otherwise, and that is not the case where you can see one facility from another. With respect to the compact itself, opponents in their paper suggest that they want TRPA to create a new threshold, to regulate the pulsing modification wireless radiation from wireless facilities. Of course, this is not the obligation of TRPA to do, particularly when the FCC has been granted primacy by Congress to regulate wireless exposure. And federal laws are read in collaboration or in harmony with each other so that they each are given meaning. And that's why TRPA and their counsel have agreed that the FCC standards apply. They're not going to create new standards and are read in harmony with the TRPA's obligations. It would be absurd for TRPA to attempt to create its own RF emission standards. I want to say, Hearing Officer Brock, I think we've established that there's no significant environmental effect or scenic effect from this facility as a faux pine tree, Jeffrey pine, with bark and needles to be collaboratively designed with TRPA and reviewed every 2 years, and at a minimum height to allow a co-locator to locate on the tower. The lower antennas will only be 2 feet above the current tree line, the adjacent tree 84 feet. There are trees up to 104 feet on this particular property, and it's been designed for that purpose. I would ask you to take the recommended action of staff. I want to give the rest of my time to Raj Mathur, who is from Hammett and Edison Consulting Engineers, to discuss the RF emissions from the facility. Raj, are you there?
Yeah, good afternoon. My name is Raj Mathur. I'm with Hammett and Edison. We are an independent consulting engineering firm located in Sonoma. I'm a licensed professional electrical engineer in the state of California. I have a master's degree in electrical engineering, and I'm part of the IEEE, the Institute of Electrical and Electronic Engineers subcommittee that sets its own independent standards on radio frequency or RF exposure. Our task as engineers is to evaluate sites like these for radio frequency exposure compliance with the FCC standard. We've completed that evaluation and find that this site will comply with the FCC limits. The maximum calculated RF exposure level anywhere aground or at any of the nearby buildings is 7.6% of the FCC limit. This means that the levels are over 13 times below the limit. There are two main reasons why the levels are so low. The first is that the antennas are directional in nature. The energy from the antennas goes out in a narrow beam towards the horizon, about 100 feet in the air, well above ground and the nearby buildings. The second reason is that the energy drops with the square of the distance. This means that when you double the distance from the antennas, the energy drops by 4 times, or the square of 2. When you go 10 times as far away, the energy drops by 100 times, that's the square of 10. So the energy from the antennas is dropping exponentially with distance. Some information regarding the standards themselves. The standards are set by the FCC at the direction of Congress and were last reaffirmed in 2019. The FCC consulted other federal agencies, most notably the EPA and the FDA, in 2019 as part of that reaffirmation process. There are several other science-based standards with similar limits. Two examples are IEEE that I mentioned earlier, where I'm part of the subcommittee that sets that standard, and our literature review team looks at thousands of peer-reviewed studies in setting that standard. And our standards are extremely similar to the FCC standard. The second example is ICNIRP, whose standard has been adopted by the European Union, and again is similar to the FCC standard. This site would easily comply with both the IEEE and ICNIRP standards as well. And as I stated earlier, it complies with the FCC limits. I'm available to answer any questions you may have. And if there's any time left, I'd like to save that for a rebuttal to the opponent's rebuttal to this rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I will turn.
Sorry, go ahead. There was 1 minute and 10 seconds left.
Oh, okay. Well, at the risk of going back and forth all day, I do think that the opponents have 3 minutes remaining to respond, and then we will turn back to Mr. Mathur if he would like to respond to that.
Okay, it's Robert Berg. I'd like to be very brief. Mr. Albrighton now says that Verizon utilized the special use permit by the city in the fall of 2020 by a tree cutting for fire safety purposes. That tree cutting was done pursuant to a separate TRPA permit. And Verizon argued on its motion to dismiss in the federal court proceeding that that tree cutting permit had absolutely nothing to do at all with this tower project. So I'm kind of astonished that he would argue here that that evidences utilization of the special use permit for this tower. He says in one proceeding it has nothing to do with it, and now he's saying, oh, that shows that we utilized our special use permit. Can't be both. Thank you.
Greg Lean jumping in, if I could have a moment. Also heard Mr. Albrighton saying that TRPA was not inclined to create a new threshold. No, that's not it at all. TRPA's thresholds cover 178 categories and 9 major subject headings, like water quality, air quality, those kinds of things. We need to look at this new technology as it affects your existing thresholds. I've given 2 examples. One is the scenic. There's a dramatic impact to have this 112-foot eyesore in a place that's not really needed. Water quality is another primary example where there's absolutely no evidence that there's no harm to species. And in fact, we have binders full of studies. We have dozens and dozens of studies in the record showing that critical riparian vegetation is harmed by EMF radiation. An example locally would be the Aspens right outside of Terra's Casino, a short distance away from TRBA's offices, which have suffered and even died since a small cell site was placed near the northwest entrance on Highway 50. This is completely unaddressed. And in addition, this increases fire danger. We have numerous studies, again, in the record, which show increased fire danger due to increased terpene production. And then after a major fire like the Caldor fire, we're going to have serious water quality impacts when we have flashy runoff. We don't have a big rain on snow event, which we've had in relatively recent decades. It's going to be an absolute disaster for an existing threshold, that being your most important one in terms of water quality. If we have any time remaining, I'll defer to any other council on my staff for any further thoughts.
And that was 3 minutes.
Thank you, Georgina. All right. Would anyone from the applicant like to use the minute and a half that's left to respond to those comments?
Yes, Paul Albritton here. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. I just want to clarify first, the tree cutting permit has nothing to do with the Verizon permit. I was misunderstood, perhaps. What I said was that Verizon Wireless redid its photo simulations and resubmitted those photo simulations once the tree cutting had been approved. And that was another good faith step of Verizon Wireless in pursuing its application. So it had nothing to do with the cutting of the trees or the permit, but the fact that we had to resubmit and photograph and resubmit our photo simulations after that occurred in, I believe, November 2020, continuing the use of our permit. I strongly believe, and Verizon Wireless's intent is to provide public safety. There's no question that wireless communications, particularly in the recent events around South Lake Tahoe, were essential for saving lives and preventing damage from fire. That's been proven over and over again by the wireless emergency alerts that are now sanctioned by the federal government. And the concept that any of the evidence provided by the opponents has any credibility with respect to water quality or any other effects of RF emissions simply isn't there and isn't acknowledged by the FCC or any current regulations.
And that was 1 minute and 20 seconds. Law.
All right.
Okay,
thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, at this time I will open the public hearing and or to public comment, and I'll ask Georgina to explain how to use the hand raising function to be recognized and provide input or testimony on this item. Each commenter will have 3 minutes, and Georgina will be keeping time and will let you know when it's time to wrap up your comments.
Members of the public who would like to address the hearings officer may do so at this time by utilizing the hand raising feature of the GoToWebinar app. The hand icon is located on the tab to the left of the GoToWebinar control panel. If you'd like to comment, please raise your hand and I will announce and unmute you, and you'll have 3 minutes to make your comments. We'll start with David Jenkins. David, it says that you are self-muted. Are you able to unmute yourself? Can you unmute the device that you're using, David? Okay, we'll come back to David and we'll go to...
There, I'm unmuted.
Okay.
Thank you. I'm sorry, apologize for that. My name is David Jenkins. I'm a city resident since 2002. I'm the retired South Lake Tahoe city manager where I served for 8 years. I have 35 years as a city CEO in California. I hold both a master's degree from UCLA and Berkeley with a bachelor's. I support improved telecommunications facilities that are safely deployed. This application on Ski Run is not a single standalone project. It is part of a large telecommunications deployment plan for the city and the South Shore that sadly was secretly developed plan, but never vetted as a whole under any guide of CEQA, NEPA, or TERPA, or formally presented to the public in its totality. This is a large-scale project in the region. No other project in the region, large or small, would be given such a laissez-faire scrutiny by local and regional staffs and officials. And I believe that the compact requires that. And I did sit on the 2007 TRPA general plan or regional plan update. An independent environmental analysis is needed, not by paid staff of Verizon, but by independent people. That's what we do in the development, on the development side. You trust, but you verify. There's no verification here. Treating this project as this is cavalier, and it is not good public policy, it's not good and proper review, and it's not good governance. The application should be denied. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we will go to Al Miller.
Can you unmute me?
You are unmuted.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
I will begin. Good afternoon, Officer Birch and everyone else. I'm grateful to be able to speak to oppose the project approval. As a retired professional civil and environmental engineer at Lake Tahoe for 25 years. These comments augment my written comments. I'm encouraged by TRPA's acknowledgement that it is not preempted by FCC rules and can regulate environmental effects of wireless facilities broadly defined to include human health. That is what is needed and lacking with the proposed project approval and why I ask for a permit denial. The record shows the project would have many significant effects on the environment, and therefore the law requires an environmental improvement statement using the best available science and public participation. Among my greatest concerns in my written comments is the increased fire threats to the community. The wireless industry has a very poor track record with regard to tower fires and collapses, often due to faulty construction and operation, but also from high winds. The increased risk of fire is unacceptable from this tower. I've also called for TRPA to change the current regulatory approach to wireless facilities until a programmatic EIS is approved to guide future development, including much safer wired and wireless alternatives. The staff position is that TRPA will defer to FCC on health and environmental effects and arbitrarily and capriciously ignore scientific evidence of harms presented, as discussed in my written comments. That's wrong. One of the things that makes the environment of Lake Tahoe unique is the extraordinary amount of public money that has been spent to preserve its unique values, especially against fire threats. State and federal authorities have spent millions and millions of dollars to prevent and fight fires, which we all know could be devastating to all the values. The TRPA is working at cross purposes with these efforts by approving this and other wireless facilities without evaluating the increased fire threat. TRPA has set us up for a wireless caused fire disaster. We need TRPA to stand up for what is right for Lake Tahoe and protect its unique values from a dangerous wireless industry using the best available science and policy, not standing behind the corrupt FCC. I'll end by saying that the time is now for TRPA to step up to its legal duty to protect our homes and communities from the health and environmental threats from a dangerous wireless industry, as the best available science shows. TRPA has been an environmental leader in the past in protecting the unique values of Lake Tahoe. I urge the TRPA to change its position and step up to its legal duties with regard to wireless facilities, and denying this project approval would be a very good start. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Miller.
Next, we will go to Benjamin Leibowitz. Benjamin, you're unmuted. Benjamin Leibowitz. Okay, we'll come back and we'll go to David Jenkins.
He's already spoken.
Gordon Patterson. Gordon, you are self-muted. Can you unmute yourself on the device you're on? Looks like you're unmuted. Gordon Patterson. Okay, we'll come back and we will go to Melina Wallish. Melina Wallish. All right, we'll go to Robert Aaron. Robert, you're self-muted. Can you please unmute yourself?
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes, we can.
Thank you very much. First and foremost, I'm with Tahoe for Safe Tech, and I appreciate the hearings officer and all of the members of the TRPA board and all of the listening public, and first and foremost, our attorneys who have carried this case on. I would like to first start off and say that I believe that the permit that they are running on is, as I had stated 2 years ago at my first council meeting, is null and void, as was stated by Robert Berg. As Mr. Albretton, I had said that the radar RF energy would be directed. Does that mean like it's a laser beam, or how would it work if someone was to be able to get a call if they were outside of that line of sight? I asked that question. First and foremost, again, the area that this tower is proposed is directly in the Bijou Creek watershed zone, which strictly prohibits any construction whatsoever. As Mr. I believe Mr. Lean stated that it is in a stream environment zone. I believe that there was also a endangered frog that was located there recently. But I also want to make it clear that I believe that I had contacted the FCC's top attorney, Erica Rosenberg, and she assured me that an environmental NEPA or CEQA analysis would be required for this project. And when I stated that it was not done, she said they had a problem with Verizon self-certifying. I believe the attorneys that Verizon has hired, along with Jonathan Kramer and Tripp May, are corrupted in what they are doing. So I think we're dealing with corrupt attorneys from the get-go here. I believe they're the stooges for Verizon from my eyes. I've been going to Heavenly Valley Ski Resort for over 30 years and driving down Needle Peak, and I have a perfect view of in the foreground Pyramid Peak. I believe any degradation or any environmental thresholds being broken. I believe all of Lake Tahoe region is not only a national treasure, but it should be under historical preservation, as I think it probably is through the Indians and the Miwoks. Furthermore, I believe that if that blocks my view of Pyramid, I will instantly sell my house and move out of Lake Tahoe. And I do not believe it fair to be a homeowner and to be having can antennas put on our rights of way on the power poles. As was stated earlier, David Benedict is a local resident. I have been watching him turn to where he is very, very sick. He has blood cancer. And I have watched it through time accelerate from him being exposed to that tower, which is right next to his house. I have a power pole right outside my house. I have two children that I raised through Lake Tahoe. My wife is a school teacher at the Environmental Science Magnet School. I am from a family of electrical and radar engineers. My father is 92, and I have two brothers that are electrical and radio engineers that work for the major companies. You guys are not telling the truth of RF exposure.
That is three minutes.
Thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Mr. Aaron.
Thank you.
Next, we have someone who declines to state their name. You're unmuted.
All right. Good afternoon, and may it please the hearings officer. I pray that you deny this application based upon adverse impacts to the environment and to the human and economic health of the neighborhood. There is no coverage gap here, and better alternatives are available. Verizon has chosen this site because it is the cheapest site for them, and the matter they have submitted contains false claims and deceptive materials. The material they've submitted. Many of these falsehoods are egregious and only rely on the hearings officer not having a technical background on such matters. Verizon deceived city officials about heavily distributed antenna system being implemented, about signal strength in the area, and lied to you about the current signal adequacy as measured by industry standards, which is actually a drive test. Also, the DC Court of Appeals has cast grave doubt, if not outright invalidated, the FCC's emission standards. The Environmental Health Trust versus the FCC 893-2021. The maps lead you to believe there is no signal on Ski Run, which is patently untrue. Moreover, the TRPA staff officer has performed a cursory review and overlooked significant impacts to the environment because the TRPA executive apparently decided in advance to appease their so-called business partners. Over 3,000 pages of peer-reviewed scientific proof that RF radiation harms the environment is on the record. In violation of the Brown Act, local government officials have created a private organization, the Tahoe Prosperity Center, and funneled public funds into it, and then held private meetings without notice to implement pet projects. Cell tower densification, aka Connect Tahoe, is one result of this illicit activity, which, by the way, is not protected free speech. It's a crime. The TRPA director is a board member of the TPC, and having agreed to Connect Tahoe, has signed on to directing her staff to approve cell towers, no matter how outrageous of a violation of TRPA's laws and ordinance they might be. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Next, we have Ben Levi.
This is Ben Levi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, I can.
Great. Thank you. I would just like to respond to Mr. Mather's comments on the antenna being the RF emissions being below the FCC's limits. The first thing is the FCC's limits have been challenged in court and been tossed back to the FCC as having no scientific basis at all. So we cannot hold those limits with any kind of standard at all because the courts have said so. Secondly, Mr. Mather's report of May 22nd, 2019, where he calculates the actual wattage. I want to quote from his report from this antenna. First of all, he says there will be 12 antennas, not just eight. And what he says is the maximum effective radiated power in 0 and 210 degree directions would be 47,090 watts. That's 47,000 watts, 47 kilowatts. Any house in the neighborhood, when exposed to 47 kilowatts of radiated power, is going to get fried. Thank you very much.
Next, we have Bryant Millesi.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm Brian Millesi. I'm the External Affairs Manager for AT&T in the region. AT&T, we are strongly in support of this site, and we'll be planning on co-locating at the site due to a coverage gap in the area for AT&T wireless service. The importance of this wireless infrastructure in the Tahoe Basin and South Lake Tahoe was exemplified by the Calder Fire last month. Where nearby wireless communication was critical in the safe evacuation efforts of South Lake Tahoe residents, supporting the city's Emergency Operations Center in South Lake Tahoe, and frontline emergency communication coordination between local, state, and federal public safety agencies, such as local police and local fire departments in responding to the fire right outside the city and the local communities. This site will help and provide a stronger wireless network for residents and public safety agencies in response to future public safety emergencies. And we are looking forward to co-locating on this site. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Millesi.
Next, we have Theodora Scarrato. Theodora, you're self-muted. Are you able?
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you so much. Theodora Scarrato, Executive Director of Environmental Health Trust. I'd like to first point out that actually, although the RF limits were provided about the limit on the ground, another pertinent issue is the radiation, which is sort of ballooning out or propagating out from the antennas themselves, because they will exceed FCC limits to a certain degree. I haven't seen that information. I think that information needs to be shared, especially because of the environmental effects. I also wanted to point out that in when the FCC affirmed their limits, of which the court case determined that they'd completely failed to consider environmental effects, it is not true, as was stated, that the EPA did consult in any meaningful way, because the Environmental Protection Agency did not submit any kind of conclusion or opinion as to if the limits were protective or not. In fact, it is very important, and I submitted extensive documentation in this issue, which is that the EPA was actually defunded from developing safety limits in 1996. They have no budget. They do not address this issue, and in fact, I recently submitted a letter from the EPA to me confirming they have done no such review since the 80s on biological effects. And most importantly, the limits that we have, the FCC limits, are human-centric. They're only derived for humans in mind, but not for birds, bees, trees, flora, or fauna. And the Congress has actually failed to fund EPA research on this issue. Now, the when the EPA was defunded, the Telecommunications Act was coming into effect. It was the heaviest lobbyist, one of the most heavily lobbied bill in the United States. It may still be, certainly at that time. I also submitted, and I know several people have, a three-part paper published in Reviews on Environmental Health, which talked about the effects of non-ionizing electromagnetic fields to flora and fauna. It's 150 pages. It has 1,200 references. And one of the authors is Albert Manville, retired branch manager and senior wildlife biologist in the Division of Migratory Bird Management at the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, now at Johns Hopkins University. And what they found was that the effects of non-ionizing electromagnetic fields include, and at vanishingly low frequencies, effects such as impacts to orientation, migration, reproduction, mating, nest and den building, territorial maintenance and defense, longevity and survivorship, including genotoxic effects. The authors argue that exposure is a pollution with significant documentation of harm, and it should be triggering regulatory and policy action. Again, FCC limits have nothing to do with impacts to animals, especially, and it is not designed to do so, especially with a lot of these frequencies, you know, depending on the frequency and other aspects of the wave, there can be a different effect, especially to insects, pollinators. And of course, there's research on the record documenting impacts to trees as described. Now, in court ruling,
that is 3 minutes.
Is that my 3 minutes? Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Scarrato.
Next, we have Tracy Reinhard. Tracy? Tracy Reinhard?
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you.
We can hear you.
Okay. Yeah, I'm one of the person here live very close to Monica and Mr. Gilliam. And I was in the military for a long time. And I know for sure these kind of tower, they are not very healthy for kids, first of all. Old people, and people with a problem, like somebody live right there close to Monica house. So I want to make sure if these people, they put this kind of tower, they're going to be cannibal for people, disease, death, everything happened, because this is a serious, it's a no joke. Second of all, I think so the fire department, they don't need this tower here with this kind of fire happen. Second of all, the generator, they be there with this tower, it be make a lot of noise. And I'm working 4 a.m. So I don't want to hear this thing. So Verizon is, if they decide to put this tower, it's better they buy my house And that's all. Good luck. God bless America.
Thank you, Mr. Reinhardt.
Next, we have Zoe Berg.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Hi. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak. My name is Zoe Berg. I'm the project director for a science-based nonprofit called Americans for Responsible Technology. Monica actually came, Monica Eisenstecken, the plaintiff in this case, or the main complainant actually contacted us a couple of, almost about a year and a half ago now, and it's just been such a tumultuous journey for her neighbors. And I would just wanted to briefly say, I didn't have any prepared remarks this evening, but I just wanted to say that, you know, this tower basically represents the antithesis of TRPA's mission. It is located in an incredibly egregious, the proposed location is incredibly egregious. It's outrageous. And this is really just beyond, you know, words and codes and ordinances. This is just basically inhumane and absolutely outrageous. And I just wanted to put that on the record, and the apathy of those who are continuously trying to move forward with this has just been remarkable. And I just wonder sometimes, you know, if the telecom representatives on this call tonight, you know, how many of them would willingly voluntarily live next door to a cell tower with their kids. It's just remarkable. So I just wanted to state my opposition, my very strong opposition to this tower. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Berg.
Benjamin Wallish, or sorry, Benjamin Leibowitz. Okay. Oops. Next, we will go to Gordon Patterson. Gordon, you are self-muted. Gordon, are you able to unmute yourself?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me? Great. Yes. Can you hear me well?
Yes.
Yes.
Fantastic. I'm a resident across the street from the proposed cell tower. And quite frankly, I get great service here in this area. I just want to make that point. Second thing is, you have my letter on record that I sent. And I wanted to say earlier that the TRPA, and I've listened to several of your calls, you always talk about environmental. In fact, there was a gentleman on earlier talking about a house in Zephyr Cove area. And there's a lot of good questions about how is the design going to be? How is it going to look? What's it going to look like? There has been nothing brought up about how this is going to look. The TRB has not asked that question today, and I've never seen it anywhere of what they've asked. So I appreciate the call today, and I strongly hope TRPA decides not to put this tower in. Again, I'm calling from across the street. I'm here right now. I'm looking at the site, and I have excellent cell service at this location. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, and Benjamin Leibowitz, are you able to unmute yourself by clicking on the orange mute button? Benjamin, you should be unmuted. We can't hear you. Benjamin, are you there? Benjamin, you need to enter your PIN. I'm sending your PIN. I will come back to you. We'll go to Melina Wallish. Melina, you're self-muted.
Can you hear me?
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me? Okay. Good afternoon. My name is Melina Wallish, and for over 20 years, have lived, worked, and am currently raising a family here in South Lake Tahoe. I live off of Ski Run Boulevard, which is already overrun with cell towers. I can visually see the one across the street by looking out my living room window or walking out my front door. There are also towers two blocks to the left, down the street to the right, and a few blocks behind us in the middle of Ski Run Boulevard. Just up the street at Heavenly Resort are several more towers on top of the mountain, on the bottom of the mountain, and a new one across the street from the mountain. Because of the proliferation of these towers, why do we need another one? This one being proposed is a massive 112-foot one that towers above the natural tree line, impacting the view of anyone that gazes towards Heavenly Mountain, whether they're riding the gondola, looking out their vacation rental window or hotel room window, or just driving down the street. Furthermore, it is a very bad idea to erect a 112-foot radiation tower on a kid's sledding hill in a family neighborhood right next to a child's bedroom window. I call it a radiation tower because the tower that is halfway up Ski Run Boulevard blasts out a max of 5,670 watts alone. In comparison, a microwave oven on average puts out 600 to 1,200 watts. The damage of the tower would be irreversible. It would forever mar the beauty of the lake, both visually and physically. A recent Facebook comment from the Tahoe Prosperity Center says, and I quote, "The tower proposed at Ski Run Boulevard reaches inside the buildings on Ski Run Boulevard. These are not just buildings. They are our homes where our families and children live. We object to harmful radiation reaching inside our homes. We don't feel safe living in an area enveloped by radioactivity. We are the voice of the people who live here and the voice for the trees and the wildlife, including the endangered mountain yellow frog who lives in a nearby stream environmental zone. We want South Lake Tahoe to remain a place of safety and beauty for all. I urgently ask you to deny this huge disaster of a tower. Thank you."
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Benjamin Leibowitz.
Testing, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Great. I had to switch to my other computer, my work computer. I work for Google. I've in the past worked for Verizon and AT&T, and very, very, very much dismissed the claims by the AT&T representative. I helped design and build the flagship stores for Verizon and AT&T. And I want to speak really right now about the untruthfulness of the application. It's so nice that they've amended their simulations for this presentation specifically. But in the past, and I've shared these documents both in City Council public records and recently to date now, they have it so much so that it is hidden. A minor fraction of the tree line canopy, which is alarming, and possibly why the approval was put in place. I want to do some math with you real quick. 110-foot tower or 112-foot tower on top of a 10-foot, 15-foot incline, where the tree canopy is 60 to 80 feet tall, would exceed graciously the tree line composition. And now build another 20-foot co-location for AT&T. If we presented this information to them as a client when I worked for AT&T or Verizon, we would have been fired. It is so egregious and so incorrect. And I think it's almost comical that they're presenting new simulations now, but at the time of the approval, which should indicate a dismissal for the approval from the City Council, that these towers, this tower specifically, would be any way which hidden, it is unfathomable. Second is that the stream that's connected to my property and the vegetation and specifically an aspen grove connected to my property where I would be able to visibly see this tower day in and day out as just this most painful example of the TRPA not doing their responsibility. I would see it very, very vividly. I haven't received a single notice, and our stream, the riparian stream that the TRPA has spent billions of dollars in efforts and science.
That is to 3 minutes.
Identify.
That is 3 minutes.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Leibowitz.
And I did see one more hand raised from Robert Aaron, and I'm not sure if we already heard from Robert Aaron. Can anybody confirm whether we heard from Robert Aaron, and can we let him speak again?
This is John Marshall. We've already heard from Robert Aaron.
Okay. So we have Jason Niemi.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Jason Niemi here. I live at Regina Road, just above Mr. Leibowitz, and I agree wholly with everything Mr. Leibowitz pointed out, and I just couldn't agree more. TRPA doesn't seem to be doing what they should be doing on this project. I don't agree with it. And I do think that there's probably better placement for this elsewhere than in the middle of a residential neighborhood, especially with the health concerns that aren't really known, the health consequences. I work in healthcare myself. I am exposed to radiation daily at my work. I don't need to be exposed to anything else more. When I come to my vacation home to escape much of the city life that I hold so precious here. So that's my two cents on the whole project. I'm against it.
Thank you, Mr. Niemi.
We have Eric Windham. Eric, you are self-muted. Are you able to unmute the device that you're on?
Hi. Yes, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, my name is Eric Windheim. I am a certified building biology environmental consultant, a certified electromagnetic radiation specialist, and a graduate of the IEEE accredited radio frequency safety officer course. So my goal is to help clients minimize exposure to man-made electromagnetic radiation. And we're based in science, and we use nature as our model and very expensive precision instruments to detect, measure, assign a biologically precautionary risk level, and then propose and effectuate solutions. Now, I have several clients recently that have been subjected to radiation from cell towers, one of which is a Verizon project here on Pocket Road in Sacramento, California. I'm sure that several of the representatives from Verizon know about that one. My clients do not complain of thermal damage, which is the whole basis of the FCC testing. And recently, of course, the court has found that the FCC has failed to address impacts of long-term exposure. FCC testing is for 30 minutes, that's all. It failed to address the impacts to children, the testimony of the injured, impacts on the wildlife, and development of children's brains. So people call me when they hurt at home and they feel better when they leave. And it doesn't take too long to take some measurements and find out, yep, they got a cell tower, but it's only 0.5% or maybe 1% or maybe 2.5% of what the FCC allows. So everything should be A-okay, right? No. My clients complain of neurological problems, not thermal overheating. They complain of headaches, fatigue, insomnia, cardiac irregularities, aches and pains, shooting stabbing pains, nightmares, depression. So for those people that have the money, we apply shielding paint, several coats, and several coats over that, and shielding screen, and shielding window film, all of which can run $10,000 or $20,000 if they want to bunker in place and turn their house into some sort of a bunker. Of course, the yard is still heavily radiated. So the whole idea that this is safe is based on the thermal equation that the only harm that can happen is by overheating of the body by 1 degree centigrade at the core body temperature. None of my clients ever complain about that. It's always neurological. And it's funny, when they go away, they feel better. When they come back home, they're suffering. And so what is the net economic value of having to spend $20,000 per home around this tower? I ask you.
That is 3 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Windheim.
And no further hands are raised, so we can continue with the review of this agenda item.
Thank you, Georgina. I do have a couple of questions for staff. One relates to the scenic evaluation. Mr. Lean mentioned that some of the evidence that was submitted in association with his appeal of the approval of the tree removal permit, there were some visual simulations that were submitted. And it does show the, I did review those, and it does show the monopine tower kind of forward, closer to the edge of the road. There is a difference between that and the simulation that is attached to the staff report. And I'd just like to get confirmation that the visual simulations that are attached to the staff report reflect the, you know, location of the monopine on the parcel.
Yes, this is Bridget Cornell speaking again. We have worked with the applicant to evaluate that, to determine that they are showing the monopine at the correct location. And through a series of analyses that we went through, we determined that that is in the correct location. If I could just clarify one point, something that might be misleading people who have viewed the plans is the tower itself is approximately 30 feet from the property line. But then there's also a distance between the property line and the edge of pavement of the street. So I think sometimes when people are reviewing the plans, it's giving the impression that the tower itself is a lot closer to the roadway than it actually is. So the simulations that have been provided do accurately represent the location of the proposed monopine.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
I also have a question related to SEZ. There was a comment, there were actually a couple of comments suggesting that the tower will be located within the SEZ, and that is not how I'm reading that site plan and the depiction. And yes, I'd like some clarification on that.
Yes. Sorry, this is Bridget Cornell speaking again. You are correct. The site is comprised of a combination of both Class 1B land capability, which is stream environment zone, and Class 1A. And the proposed cell tower and the equipment shelter will only be in Class 1A. So this will have, there is nothing that will be happening within the Class 1B portion of this parcel related to this project. And in fact, some of the coverage that will be removed is closer to the stream environment zone and will be relocated further away from that.
Okay, thank you. I'd also like to ask whether or not Mr. Mathur is still with us.
Yes, I'm still here.
I'm going to ask if you could respond. There were a couple of comments, and this is a very technical area. I would like to know if you could respond. There was a comment suggesting that 47 kilowatts, you know, would have a very destructive effect. And I just wondered if you could respond to that.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that was from our report, and that's correct. The maximum effective radiated power from the antenna is 47 kilowatts. Keep in mind that that is 100 feet in the air at the antenna. And there is very little energy going straight down to a ground level and at the nearby homes. And again, RF exposure levels at ground and nearby homes are calculated to be 13 times below the FCC limit. And then just to give a comparison on the power levels, what they might mean compared to other devices and transmitters, comparing to, for example, a TV station, that might be 1,000 kilowatts power. An FM station can be 50, 100 kilowatts of power. And so those are some other transmitters for comparison purposes.
Okay, thank you. And I understand that there was one additional public comment having trouble getting their hand raised. So I'd like to go back to Georgina if she's able to get that commenter.
Yes, we're going to hear from Cordelia Vietkerry. Cordelia, you are self-muted.
There. How's that?
That's good.
Thank you. I did have my hand raised, so thank you. A lot of points were covered. I'm Cordelia Vietkerry, and I live in the neighborhood. I guess one thing I would really like to stress is the residents in my neighborhood do think the tower is injurious to the health of the individuals and the children. And we do have children in our neighborhood. The Children's Health Defense won a historic case on August 13th, 2021 against the FCC, challenging the agency's decision not to review its 1996 health and safety guidelines regarding wireless-based technologies, including 5G. I think this is extremely important as TRPA looks to see how they can protect the residents of the Tahoe Basin. I also want to say, have any of you ever looked at one of those trees and said, oh, that fits right in? They're just awful looking. And what people have said is true. We look right at it every day, those who of us live in the neighborhood and we walk around. Plus the fact we all live in the mountains. So those radiation beams that go up in the air, that's right, they go right up into our homes because we're living right up in the mountains on the air. And the other thing I think has not been brought out is those macro towers need many, many little mini towers to communicate with. There's already over 68 of them in our town, and I think there's hundreds more of them planned. And a couple of them I have seen that are right in the front yards of people who have lived here a long time. So I'm really against that macro tower, but especially with the health and the children's case. Thank you.
Thank you. Georgina, do we have any other commenters who would like to participate?
I see no. I see a hand raised. I believe that we heard from Robert Aaron. Can you please confirm?
Yes, we did.
Okay. No other hands are raised, so we can continue with the review of this agenda item.
Thank you, Georgina. At this point, I will close the public hearing. And I'd like to thank everyone for their thoughtful participation. There were a significant number of comments and a lot of information that was submitted. I did review the comments, and I went through the information that was submitted regarding concerns, all this array of concerns that has been raised. So I do appreciate all the time and effort that was put into participating today. I've also reviewed the facts and the analysis that staff has prepared regarding the TRPA thresholds. I'd also like to assure everyone that I did review carefully the decision in Environmental Health Trust Children's Health Defense versus the FCC that came down in August of this year, and how that relates to the status of the existing FCC standards. I've also considered the legal limitations related to the required harmonization of the TRPA compact and FCC regulatory authority. Again, I appreciate everyone's thoughtful participation. I will approve the findings contained in the staff summary, including a finding of no significant environmental effect, and approve the project based on the staff report and subject to the conditions contained in the draft permit.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
This is John Marshall. I don't know if Andrew's back on or what. Could you just conclude the item, go to item number six?
Oh, yes.
And adjourn?
Yes, we will go to item number six on the agenda and adjourn the meeting.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ending the meeting in 3, 2, 1.